Welcome to Shep Talks. My name is Jen Handy, and I am Shep's Associate Director. Joining me for today's episode is Dr. Katie Gray Brown, Professor of Philosophy and Peace Studies and Director of the Peace Studies Institute at Manchester University. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Jen. I'm happy to be here with you.
All right. So, as I mentioned, you are the Director of the Peace Studies Institute at Manchester University. Can you tell me what is this institute? What's happening there? How did you get involved? All of that.
Well, I usually start by saying Manchester University in Indiana. We are a small liberal arts, primarily undergraduate institution, affiliated with the Church of the Brethren, which is one of the historic peace churches. And in 1948, Manchester developed the first undergraduate peace studies program in the world. And it came from this combination of really looking at what the world had just experienced through the course of World War II, thinking about how possibly that could be avoided in the future, and then the Church of the Brethren's historic pacifist position, a commitment to nonviolence. So we had professors here, one in particular, Gladys Muir, who was thinking about, well, what is the role of the Church of the Brethren colleges in preparing young people to be peace leaders, to be peace builders in the world? And so the curriculum developed in 1948. Just launched straight into this undergraduate program in peace studies. And even at that time, it was a pretty nuanced understanding of peace and violence. The founders required cultural anthropology and PE courses in folk games from around the world and rural economics, because there was a sense of, if we want to prevent large-scale violence, we have to understand all the small-scale factors that contribute into conflict and contribute into injustice, and all that builds into direct violence and war. So for about 20-some years, we had the kind of the corner. I mean, the second program developed a couple decades later. So for 20-some years, this was the only place in the world that was really focusing an entire undergraduate curriculum for people who wanted to major in peace studies.
And what you're saying is,
go ahead.
And you're saying, like, they took a kind of global thing, this very big, I'm just trying to wrap my head around this, like, you're looking at the world and kind of a world war and massive conflict, and they had the kind of foresight to see that, like, individual PE class, like, such a small, interpersonal, local level conflict. I feel like that's really impressive to be able to say, I want to see, take this huge thing that happened in the world, and we're going to get really small because that's how we make change and understand peace. I don't think I knew that. That's very profound.
The Church of the Brethren is a very small, modest tradition. So I think that the model is thinking, all right, what do we have the capacity to do? And what do we have the capacity to do well? And you add to that, how do we sustain the community that's necessary to build up into these bigger projects? And so a hallmark of our peace studies program has also been paying close attention to the experience of community, like what it means to be in community, what a good community feels like, but then also what is possible when you have a community. That has been a hallmark of our program. We intentionally invest in experiences that can help students understand what it means to be in community, because we see that as being tied to transformative peace building.
Yeah,
so that's a little bit of the history.
Has it changed much? I mean, I feel like what you just described seems like somewhat what you're still doing. Maybe not the PE courses. Maybe you are still doing PE courses. I just didn't know it. But you definitely still have that multidisciplinary approach. It seems pretty, maybe your practices have changed a little bit, but has it changed much in those, ooh, 80 years? I just did math on the
79.
fly.
Oh, you did. It's yeah, today is this is our 75th anniversary of Peace Studies. It has changed as the struggles for justice and peace building have changed, right? So it has expanded to look at civil rights, during the 1960s when we had students involved in the student sit-in protests. And then through the 1970s, when there was a real emphasis on questions of gender justice. And then through the 1980s, when we were looking at Cold War dynamics and the mass popular movement to rein in nuclear proliferation, right? So there have been ways that the program has shifted, and some of that has depended upon current contexts and current crises, and some of it has depended upon what kind of resources that we have as a small institution. Mostly it's been guided by like a lot of student interest and passion, but the lenses have remained the same. I mean, we think, well, all right, so whenever possible, the preference is for nonviolent conflict resolution. That seems pretty uncontentious, right? That where we can resolve conflict nonviolently, we ought to, right? And then the second prism is that human rights should be protected and promoted, right? So those we feel, and this is a normative field. We make a value judgment about right and wrong in the world, about better and worse, right? And so this is Peace Studies is rooted in the humanities at Manchester for that reason, is because we have our biases, and we think that they're defensible. I think that, the preference for nonviolent conflict resolution and the prioritizing of human rights, those are normative judgments, right? We're saying that some things are better than others in the world. But from those to premises, right? We look at all of the problems that people are experiencing and explore solutions that can bring us to better ways of living together.
That's great.
Yes. Well, it means that so peace studies goes in lots of directions, right? Right now, a key emphasis is in questions of climate justice and climate resiliency. So we are continually developing new partnerships, even within our institution. We are working very closely right now with environmental studies, another interdisciplinary program that sees, well, we have to use all of these different disciplinary tools because this is a critical question, a critical challenge for us. And we all need to be bringing our disciplinary tools to address this problem together. Okay. And that's what led Peace Studies to SHEP, honestly, was we were recognizing poverty as a critical issue. This is not something new to our program. Our Peace Studies classes, since the founding, have looked at questions of economic disparity, have looked at questions of poverty and lack, both locally and internationally. But thinking about it more intentionally, and imagining the best ways that we can expose our students to the possibilities of transforming poverty in our lives led us to SHEP, right? And because SHEP provides such a perfect fit for that interdisciplinary approach.
Yeah, I think something that sticks out is it reminds me when we talk about issues around poverty, that poverty kind of you can't put it in one study. You know, it you have to think about it in medicine and biology and sociology and economics. It's hard to kind of just study it. I can imagine similarly studying peace and conflict, you're going to have conflict in environmental issues and in like medical ethics, and huge issues come up, and it's definitely one of those undercurrents, the core. I can imagine it would be hard to like say we're only going to study peace and conflict. And it makes sense that kind of as the issues change, where conflict is kind of prevalent in culture or in the news, that those partnerships change and shift. It's similar to a lot of other poverty studies programs, where as things shift, partnerships kind of change and what we're looking at and what we're studying and research. But the same commitments and core reasons for doing things and commitment to dignity of others, those kind of stay consistent as we operate in different realms.
Absolutely, yes. And I mean, like looking at poverty from a perspective of a normative perspective of saying we want to alleviate this. We are poverty abolitionists, right? That's a value judgment. But making that commitment requires us to look at the world in a different way than if we just studied medicine without that commitment, right? Without that understanding. And peace studies is exactly, it's exactly the same, right? Is that you are accepting a certain moral charge. You're accepting a moral commitment. And then you're looking at your studies, you're looking at your field for how to pursue that moral commitment.
And you take that with you, whatever field you go into, whatever career, whatever civic engagement, personal engagement, that is both Shep and you are, we're looking at how to kind of develop that in a person and in a community rather than trying to put people on one specific career path, which is what I think it's really impressive. But for about the past year, you've been working with us to develop a conflict transformation curriculum, specifically targeting our summer interns. And for many of us, myself included, when I first heard it, conflict transformation was a relatively new term to me. And it took me a minute to understand, like, is that just conflict resolution? Are we just changing names? I know we often like to call the same thing, we change names for stuff, but they're not exactly the same, right? Can you kind of tell me how they're the same, how they're different? Deep questions.
It is. Well, and because in the field, many of the long-standing sort of organizations and practices still they were designed under that term conflict resolution, and so that persists in some ways. But many practitioners have recognized that like conflict transformation does is a better framework for understanding how conflict really works. Conflict resolution just presents this sort of model of, oh, there's a conflict. It arises out of nowhere, right? Conflict emerges, and then we draw upon these different tools and techniques and understandings and insights to resolve it, and then conflict goes away. So just from that picture, right? First, it's easy to understand this emergence of conflict then as a negative experience, right? All of a sudden, we have something that we have to take care of, right? That we have to resolve, because things will be better when the conflict is resolved and we don't have conflict anymore. And it kind of boxes conflict into this tidy little sort of cell in our lives, that is something that is worth studying and worth developing some skills at, mostly to get past, So it really it feeds this understanding of conflict as being something negative, conflict as being a hassle, conflict as being something to avoid, honestly, right? Because then it won't have to be resolved at all. practitioners have given a much a much more helpful and I think accurate understanding of conflict as something that does rise, that does grow, but then can be addressed if we have tools and skills, and move us forward, right? So instead of a circle or a spike where conflict spikes, and you're not going to see this because I'm gesturing on, even though this
You
is your
draw a
husband.
cartoon on the
I
show
could draw
notes.
cartoon. So the conflict resolution model might suggest that conflict spikes and then goes back down to zero. A conflict transformation model presents, well, maybe a conflict is something that grows, right? And so it scales up, and then we find a way to address some of those problems and change the conflict, transform the conflict so that it no longer becomes a crisis and it moves us forward somehow. So the diagrams of conflict transformation have like a spiral that a line that spirals, right? So you have points in which a conflict arises, and then it diminishes and moves us forward because we've been able to transform that conflict.
Well,
And then that allows us to imagine, well, conflict is it draws our attention to something that we need to discuss, right? It's like, oh, something is going on here that needs our attention. What can we do to give this the attention it needs that will move us forward in a positive direction?
Yeah, two thoughts came to my mind there. One was that I was very watching the circles. The other is very, beautiful circles. I feel like when conflict resolution, that word reminds me of problem solving. So it's like you want to solve it and be done with it. It's not something you want to coexist with. It is a bad thing, and you can be good at getting rid of it. And there's no place to kind of sit with it or how to, normalize it. I feel like there's some power in, like, there will be conflict, and that does not mean it's a broken system. The other thing, which is from a very different side of the world, is, within business, in the business world, and we are planning things, someone said conflict is great. Have you ever been in a meeting without conflict? It's boring. Like, the whole point is to, what you said, draw your attention to something we should discuss, which could be an opportunity. There's a conflict between two ideas, and where should we go with it? And let's discuss it. Let's focus on it. The conflict is what pushes us. And so I have seen recently more people kind of leaning into the idea that conflict is also this thing that does focus us. And sometimes it needs more of that resolution, and sometimes you need skills, and sometimes it's what helps us focus on an issue and attention. And but yeah, that conflict has a bad rap, and we're working on that.
Yeah.
So is, like, conflict resolution out, or is it just kind of terms are used interchangeably? If our listeners wanted to talk about it, they could use it interchangeably.
Absolutely.
Great. Okay, so when we were piloting the curriculum last summer, and we're gonna roll it out to all of our students this summer, what were some of your goals for the curriculum? Obviously, it is a short program. It is kind of it's not a 10-year long program of intensive weekly sessions. It's what were kind of some of the things you were thinking about when you designed the course?
Well, conflict transformation and conflict skills are th that's the easiest part of peace studies to promote, right? Because there is this widespread recognition that conflict skills, communication in conflict skills, are just clearly applicable personally and professionally, no matter who you are or what you're doing. And so, thinking about this for Shep, conflict practice, conflict skills, I have that same sort of spectrum of application. And I was thinking that, what are the experiences in a really intensive 8-week experience? What are some of the points of conflict? that chef folks are likely to experience. Okay, and so that was everything from I'm living with people that I don't like. Or not that I don't like, but living, I'm in a living situation that's not entirely in my control, and things are not always going to go my way when I come home from my internship too. I'm working at an internship site that has me doing things that I'm not comfortable with, or that I'm not getting the support that I need, and I don't know how to ask for it. Two, I have this problem with Shep, and I don't know how to address it, right? So there, and we could add another eight different scenarios to that list easily of the ways that someone entering into any 8-week summer internship might experience conflict. And
Well, and
because, go ahead.
to add on that, like those are when it's not going the way, sometimes it doesn't go the way you plan, right? So even if you are having the most wonderful site and you found your new best friends for life and your thing, when we talk to our interns, we warn them the purpose of this internship is to recomplicate it in some ways. You know, you're doing a lot of academic work. You're doing this to be in the community and to kind of, it makes it messy again. And that is, it's full of conflict and seeing even community partners having make choices about resource allocation and come, even when everything is absolutely perfect, they're experiencing some very intense conflicts by design. And so when you add on new places and new people and different styles and different backgrounds, and sometimes the first professional setting you're in, yeah, it definitely, it's already designed to be pretty kind of intense in that way. But yeah, I think adding all of those in.
Right. I mean, learning to be uncomfortable is a skill, and it takes courage, right? And so I think that that's a hallmark of the people who choose Shep, is that these are students who understand the value of navigating things that are uncomfortable, situations that are uncomfortable. And they're willing to put themselves out there on that, and that's if I mean if we think about like what it feels like wading into a conflict or recognizing that we are in the middle of a conflict, that for most of us is an uncomfortable situation. So, thinking about well, what how can we equip ourselves to respond positively in a way that's constructive and in a way that doesn't harm our relationships or our work or ourselves when we're in the middle of that, right? And so I think the ambitions for this conflict transformation component in SHEP are pretty modest because we recognize that there's already a lot going on. There's so many moving parts, not just for these students, but for Shep, right? Trying to figure out how do we maintain the integrity of what Shep is already doing and add what is a complete field, right? Of conflict transformation
Give us
studies.
5 hours of your time, and we will teach you everything you ever needed to know. We're not quite that good. You're very good at your job, but I don't think that's the ambition.
No, and it's not, it's so that's not the goal. If we tried to do that, we would do nothing well, right? I
Right.
think that it's important to recognize both the capacity and also just what is possible for us to do. But the training that has emerged and is continues to emerge, right, that is developing in Chef is an introduction to some of these concepts with the primary goal of reducing the stigma of conflict and reducing fear of conflict. Okay. And sometimes, I mean, Shep knows this in other and in with respect to its work in other sorts of preparation for these sometimes challenging, hard internship sites. Just acknowledging the lay of the land, acknowledging the discomfort, can do a lot to destigmatize the experience that people have going into conflict. And being able to say, this is rough for me. This is not comfortable, because we have a conflict and we need to figure out how to work together to address it or to even talk about it, not even to address it necessarily. But giving people an introduction to that and an introduction to some of the tools that are pretty basic in terms of communicating about conflict or ways that we understand our own responses to conflict, can be so helpful. It's like disproportionately helpful. It's like taking a drop of food coloring and
Great.
putting it into a glass. Just a tiny bit of an introduction can really provide a diffuse effect, on how
Okay.
people experience conflict.
Well, I noticed that in the curriculum, we've talked about a lot of the conflict they will experience has to do with their colleagues or their space or their city, but you really start the module thinking about their own relationship and ideas about conflict. Is that kind of why that drop that does so much is it's like we really focus for a bit, and I think the students have never asked like, what words do they associate with conflict? What is your relationship to conflict? Is that kind of why you start there and then build out to tools kind of at that personal level?
Yes, that is exactly why. And we have that. And I forget where you placed yourself. So we have that opening exercise. If we're in a room and I am standing in the center of the room and you imagine that I am conflict, where would you position yourself in relationship to me? Right. So this is very simple, basic opening exercise to get people to think about how they respond to conflict. And I forget where you put yourself.
Oh, I don't. Well, I was, first of all, let me say, I was surprised at how, like, it was just you threw that question at us. We had no prep, right? And the number of us that came in with very strong reasons on our exact placement. So some people would be like, I would be halfway back in the room behind a desk, but near the door. And like, we're like, that is, it's like, I want to see. We were all very, for some reason, if you asked me what my relationship to conflict would be, I would have no idea how to answer that. But you asked me to put myself in that room, and I was like, oh, I know where I'm standing. I am directly in front of it, and so it doesn't fear me, but that thing better not get behind me, right? I need to see it and have it directly in front of me, and I am fine. But if it goes behind me, this it's all gone. And we had people, running out the door. I think someone was like escaping out a window. But I think I was surprised at how much we were able to kind of process about our relationship by asking it in that way. Whereas if you had asked me directly, I'd have been like, I don't know, conflict is conflict. Whereas we all had very detailed answers very quickly. So that was definitely interesting. And by doing it in a cohort, hearing the other people's that they were going to be living together, like, oh, this person, that's the person who runs away from conflict. That's helpful to know. So do you notice that, or have you heard from folks that just kind of going through some of these exercises have changed how they think about conflict or kind of started them down a journey? Like, kind of, what kind of feedback do you get about it?
I agree. That's been my experience too, that people know exactly where they will be in that room. And that allows them to sort of step out of themselves and say, oh, this is how I react to conflict, or this is where I'm most comfortable, conflict. And then when we pair that with the conflict styles analysis, which is a tool that people can find. There are all sorts of questionnaires that will help with this, but the US Institute of Peace has an online an online site, not an online site, that will lead you through that. So it describes the different conflict styles. And that allows people to really understand, oh, this is how, and it's not necessarily your only response, but this might be your dominant, your go-to response. But if we add to that, if we say, okay, this might be our go-to response, this might be how we are, you know, our first instinct with respect to conflict is, just as we can practice to develop other kinds of responses in different avenues in our life, we can study and practice other kinds of conflict styles. All of these conflict styles have their strengths and their challenges. You know, each of them can be more appropriate in a certain circumstance than another. So we really try to emphasize, you know, just because if I'm a conflict avoider, if I am a conflict avoider, there are some really good, there are some really good qualities to that in terms of there are times when that will serve me and the other people I'm with very well. Right? There are drawbacks. I have to be aware of them as well, so that if I'm in a different circumstance where avoiding is not going to serve me or what I care about or the people I care about will not serve us well, then I need to turn to some other style, maybe, to push myself to develop some skills in these other ways.
Yeah, I think it does a really good job of explaining that there isn't a right place to be, and you know, kind of really focusing on that self-awareness. The other thing that I loved about the curriculum was I think at some point you were teaching tools to our students, and you were like, you know what? It's gonna feel strange for a while. This is something you have to learn to do or a way to say it, and it might feel silly, but you know what? If you're laughing at how silly it sounds while you're doing it, it still works. You're still learning the conflict transformation, like how to work it out. And if you're kind of not making fun of it, but kind of laughing through it because it sounds forced, but it still works. And you're still learning those skills. And I think we chuckled that, you know, one of our goals would be that in that conflict, that if they could pull back on the tools that we were working on, and even if they're like, gosh, this is sounds silly, but like they could laugh at us and our, you know, but try out the tools and see how they worked and have space for each other to work it out was kind of a goal we had. Before my last question, we are going to do something we've never done on a Shep podcast before, and we are going to take a commercial break. So we will be back in a moment.
Shep work on conflict transformation is made possible by the Middlebury Conflict Transformation Collaborative. Middlebury College has made a commitment to serve as an incubator for research, teaching, and student experiences to address divisiveness in society. Soon, members from the collaborative will join us on Shep Talks to talk about their work with over 100 partners and their vision to embed principles and practices of conflict transformation in the liberal arts from high school to graduate school. Thanks to the Middlebury Conflict Transformation Collaborative for partnering with us on this important work.
Welcome back. Finally, as you mentioned earlier, the Shep internship program is really designed to challenge students, provide opportunities for growth, and that comes with ample opportunities for conflict. If you could give students one piece of advice for when they encounter conflict this summer, I know one, or you can make it like one with five bullet points. I don't know. Like in that moment, conflict has arisen. What is that piece of advice?
I encourage people to take a deep breath. When we are uncomfortable or when we are confused, the temptation is to rush something. I think sometimes to get through it and there's great power in just being able to just to sit still for a moment or just to ask for more information, right? Or to say Let me think about that for a minute. That's being able to just say, let me think about what let me think about that for a minute. Sometimes in philosophy we say, one of our best tools is a single phrase, wait, what? Right? It's just it because that phrase serves to slow things down and ask for more information. And one of the most powerful tools in conflict is feeling in your bones this assurance that understanding someone's perspective does not mean agreeing with it. Right? That if we can slow down and understand what is going on for someone else in a conflict, right, that opens up all these new possibilities to figuring out, well, okay, so what are their interests? What are their fears? What's really going on here? Before attending to our own responses or saying, well, no, I don't agree with this person, so I have to just run into that and confront this conflict in a very direct or adversarial way, right? But slowing down so and really working to understand what's going on and maybe what are the factors that are behind it, allows us then to really sit with where we're at and figure out how to move forward in this. But so understanding does not mean agreeing, and be willing to ask for a moment just to breathe, because that will automatically calm ourselves and make us better equipped to addressing whatever challenge it is that's in front of us.
I love that. I think there's sometimes that the wait what, I'm so eager to get to the what that I forget the wait. And the wait might have told me to breathe or to say, this is not the moment. I'm not ready to hear the what. It gives me a chance to check in with myself as well, of like, oh, before I attack that conflict, maybe making sure I'm in a place where I can be open to hearing the other side. And if I'm not, the wait can give me a breath to get to that place and be ready to hear someone else's perspective and know that I'm not kind of in that defensive, kind of get out of that mode, that adversarial mode, and into an understanding mode. So I really like that it's not just the what, but it's the wait, what? Well, thank you. Thank you for taking your time to hang out with me today. Thank you for all your work on helping us with the conflict transformation module and your work at Manchester. This has been Shep Talks.